This is episode 106 with Hiten Patel.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tayo Roxon.
Welcome, everybody, to As Told by Nomads, and today I have with me Hiten Patel. If you don't know who he is, you better know who he is. He's an artist extraordinaire who was born in Bolton to parents who emigrated from India. Welcome to the show, Hiten.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Oh, man. I got to tell you, when I, your TED Talk, who am I, is easily one of the best TED Talks that I've ever watched, in my opinion. I remember I was watching it because I watch a lot of TED Talks. I was watching it in bed in the middle of one of my projects, and I was like, "Wow, I got to rewatch this," because I couldn't believe what I'd seen. Because I'd seen you in your Indian, looking garment, and then you had your translator come side by side. So I didn't know who was gonna talk or what was gonna say anything.
Yeah, sure.
And then you start speaking. I think Mandarin. Is it Mandarin or Cantonese?
It's Mandarin.
Mandarin. Yeah. And then she starts translating what you're saying, and I'm like, what? That was not what I was expecting. I was expecting maybe the Mandarin to come from her because she looked Chinese, and maybe, I don't know, if you would do something in an Indian dialect. And I was like, wow, that's completely different from what I was expecting. But then it spoke to what you're obviously the title of what you were saying, Who Am I? And I just wanted to commend you in that. But it seems like you challenge a lot of common assumptions. Is that correct?
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, it's kind of, I guess that was the idea with the opening of that TED Talk. It's kind of, in terms of what do we see and what do we expect, in terms of what voices or identities we see come from people. And I want to kind of, flip that on its head a bit. And I guess not necessarily in a kind of a preachy way of, don't judge me kind of thing, but it's also, a thing for myself. I do it as it's human nature. We all do it. As you say, you see someone who looks a particular way, and you might expect a particular voice to come from them or a particular language. And I think it's good to be reminded that, particularly in our global society, that these things don't just stand 100% true anymore.
That's correct. No, I get confused several times for something, oftentimes I live in New York City now, and they might confuse me as an African American, but sometimes when I'm around other people, my accent tends to shift. I go in moments where it might be Nigerian. I have a lot of family in England. I heard somewhere that you might have a Manchester accent. Is that correct?
It's very close to there. It's a Bolton accent. So Bolton is just kind of 20 minutes drive from Manchester. So it's kind of in the same neighborhood.
I agree, and I'm so with you on how sometimes first impressions can mislead us. Can you give us a background of how you got started in the business? I know your parents emigrated, to England, and then the story just went on from there. Because I imagine you've had accent changes and the times when you had to evolve, but it led you to art.
Yeah, I mean, my folks were born in Kenya in Africa, and they partly grew up in India, where the heritage is from, and then they moved to the UK, and I was born in Bolton, and so my first language was the Indian language of Gujarati, but at school, I was the only brown kid there, and so there's kind of a lot of negative energy there, a lot of racism and things. So, partly the first thing you start to do just through, I guess, survival and self-defense in a way is try to fit in. So, you know, went through a process of trying to lose my accent and learning English and all of those things. So I guess that was my first taster of doing it. And then, yeah, you just get, as all kids do, I think, get entrenched into wanting to fit in. So whether this is the accent, you know, the rhythm of how you talk, what you talk about, the way you look, and all of that. And then, you know, I feel like that kind of continues, or just for me anyway, kind of throughout my life, whether, you know, I moved to Nottingham, which is kind of, you know, 100-odd miles south of Manchester to go to university, and you meet all different kinds of people. And, you know, it's kind of a, every time you meet someone new, it's a good mirror up against yourself to kind of check in with, I guess, who you are or who you want to be, or it's kind of an interesting place.
No, it's so true. As a son of a diplomat, you hear a lot of times you're called a third culture kid. So a third culture, I don't know if you know, you're familiar with the term, third culture kid, or TCK. So okay, it's basically means you spent the formative periods of your life outside a parent's culture. So someone like me, or a missionary kid, or someone that just travels a lot, would have his parents' culture, their culture, and a mix of a bunch of all the cultures they have. So defining home can be difficult sometimes, right?
And
it resonates with me with the accent thing, because when I first moved to Burkina Faso, and I was in American International School, I remember it resonated with a statement you said in NPR. You said at one point you're ashamed that you added you spoke in an Indian. You spoke in an Indian dialect, or you had an Indian language you were speaking. You were ashamed of something at that.
Absolutely.
Right. And I remember being stuck when I was with the American school. I just thought everybody sounded cooler than me because they sounded.
Yeah.
I was like, man, I just sound so pronounced.
And I
was ashamed of myself for thinking that I was inferior, but I felt inferior.
Absolutely.
Isn't it crazy how accent sometimes can be a reflection of identity sometimes?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I guess, you know, language in itself is really intrinsic of a people, of a culture, of a history.
Yeah.
And so whether it's, I think, a combination of accent and the way that you say things and the vocabulary that you use, that's all sort of entrenched in language. I guess that's not being part of that, or that feeling kind of alien to you, is partly what you know, where this kind of ashamedness comes from, I think. Or, and I think also comes from this idea that, you know, like with yourself and like with me being in the UK, it's kind of, we have in our consciences that you know, the West is a superior place,
right,
to where we've come from.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I technically have not come from India, but, you know, you sort of have that mentality of sorts. Mm. So I think part of that shame also comes from that, whether it's put on, whether it's kind of something that comes from people or not, actually.
Yeah, it's very unconscious sometimes, and it becomes pronounced the more you're around other people. But like the next statement that you said, you know, you had said, imitating someone can reveal something unique. And that, I want you to speak on that, but that is so true. I found that out myself the more I was trying to do that. I was saying, I just had this interesting blend of accents or stuff like that, but at some point I stopped trying, and I just became myself in an interesting way. I was like, you know what? This is just me. I am this interesting. Yeah. I'm the world citizen. I'm just going to be that. I'm not going to worry anymore.
Yeah. I mean, was that like a one particular point, or you just sort of realized after a while that you kind of become more comfortable with it?
Well, it was, so I, you know, I left Nigeria, gone to an American international school in a French-speaking country, you know, started picking up all these cultural nuances, and then I was coming back to Nigeria. So when I came back to Nigeria, I had this different accent. You know, I played several more sports. And then the conversation became, you're not Nigerian enough. And then I was like, you know what? This is no. I'm not going to. I was like, you're not going to do this. I just told myself, Tyra, you can't constantly I mean, there's one thing where you can adapt and do it, you know, for business, but it's not that if you feel like you have to change yourself every time. So I just, you know, I just let my accent be whatever it is, and it slips here and there. But I was like, you know, I have to learn how to just love myself for who I am and just accept that I have an interesting background. It's a reflection of what I've done, and every country that I've been to is, you know, part of me, and it's a show. So, yeah. I'm curious about your story, though.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the acceptance of what those things are, yeah, I mean, it's funny. I mean, I like yourself, my accent kind of slips and changes as well, depending. I mean, I live in London now, so, you know, it's like with New York, it's such a cosmopolitan place that, you know, you're not really around one particular accent a lot of the time, if you like. There's people from all over. But so you kind of, my accent kind of becomes not weaker, but less strong in terms of being a northern accent. But, you know, the second I'm on the phone to my dad, suddenly it's almost an immediate transformation without me realizing. And, you know, to the extent where someone will hear me on here on the phone to my dad, and I get off the phone and like, are you kidding me? Like, is that a joke? Are you trying to make me laugh or something? Like, well, you know, you just don't realize you do it.
Right.
And I think part of, I think less to do with settling on an accent or how to talk. I guess it's kind of, I guess happy with, yeah, probably similar to what you're saying in terms of you can become more comfortable with the idea that it doesn't just have to be one thing and that's okay. And I think the thing I like about it not becoming being rigidly one thing in some ways is that you know, I mean, I used to think, you know, it should be exactly one thing all the time, because then it should be like, you know who you are, you're comfortable with it, and this is what you are. But in terms of accents changing a bit or changing the cadence of how you speak or whatever, for me, that's kind of an expression of empathy, you know, in terms of kind of relating to who you're talking to a bit and kind of trying to listen to how they are, and to, you know, it's about communication in my mind. Kind of you know, you kind of adapt how you talk, what you talk about, for how long or whatever, depending on who you're talking to and what the situation is. So it's kind of, for me, it feels like reading the situation and trying to find the best way to communicate in whatever place or situation you're in.
Absolutely. I definitely think it's reading the situation, and I at one point began to see it and as an advantage, being able to shift. Just sometimes I was like, oh, you know what? Wow, I could actually, you know, go be that bridge in between several of these cultures. But I can listen to a Nigerian sound dialect. I can listen to a British dialect. I could, you know, I could do the same with an African, and I can fit in. And sometimes, you know, I think it's so interesting when, like you, I wake up every morning knowing that I'm perceived as African American. And then I would say I'm Nigerian, and I have looks on their faces like, wow, your English is great. Your English is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, we were colonized by England. But we're like, wow, so good, so good. So I wake up already, I'm aware of that. And that doesn't even offend it. I remember when I was 17, when I first came to the States, I've said this on previous episodes, but one of my roommates, you know, they were legitimately fascinated with me being from Nigeria after I had done like some convincing that I was. And then he was asking me Lion King stories. Like,
what?
Lion, do you sleep with lions? Do you stay in the hut? Do you talk like Mufasa? I'm like, I thought he was punking me at first, but then other people kept asking me the same questions. Like, you know, is it like the Lion King? I'm like, in East, and that's just a thing. I was fascinated that was where they went to. So it's interesting.
Of course. It is fascinating. No, and like you, I definitely consider it a massive advantage now. You know, like, I kind of, you know, the things that I was so annoyed at as a kid, having the Indian Gujarati language, you know, I used to, the racism was that bad, I used to go home and kind of crying to my mom and be angry at her that I wasn't white.
Right.
And, you know, so having gone from that place to now really appreciating so much that I grew up bilingual, that I feel like it's kind of it is at the core of the way that I see the world now. Or, you know, there's something about growing up bilingual from the start that give that sort of, I guess I talk about this a lot as well, but I feel like it embeds in you from the very start that there is more than one way to communicate, to understand something, to say something, to see something. And, you know, although you don't quite understand it that way when you're growing up,
I
really see it that way now. And I think it's behind everything that I do now, like, you know, in terms of making artwork across different media, in different art forms, enjoying different languages, enjoying different ways to communicate with different kinds of people. I think being bilingual and being kind of having been in a situation where I've been very sensitive to those things, I think it really informs my outlook on life and the way I see the world now.
Absolutely. And you did an interesting experiment where you cut your hair.
That's right.
Yes. And you wanted to, we're talking of imitation here. So you wanted to imitate your dad for a long period of time, and you filmed the progression. Can you talk to the audience about that whole experience?
Sure, sure. I mean, before this point, I was doing a lot of artwork where I was doing markings onto my own body using henna, sort of a temporary tattoo. And so I was interested in this idea of looking at identity by looking at something happening on the surface of your skin. You know, it's how we judge each other.
So
I wanted to go a bit further with that and look at my facial hair growth, I guess, or my so I was interested in this idea of trying to look like my dad when he first emigrated to the UK, and this kind of look in the late 60s, early 70s that Indian men would have with this kind of big side parting hair and this big and this kind of bushy mustache. So what I did is shaved off all my hair on my head and clean shaven all my face, and then I did, like, you know, I took a picture every day of the growth over about, I think it was about 3 months, 4 months, something, and this kind of made a slow moving video work where you sort of see the hair growing slowly on my face and sort of see this transformation, I guess. But it was, you know, it became this kind of situation where I kind of planned in my head how long the hair would take to grow and how long the mustache would take to grow, but I kind of misjudged it, and the mustache just got really way too big, and you know, became this ridiculous thing where it looked, you know, cartoon Mexican or kind of something that was kind of hyper what I was trying to do. So it sort of, you know, grows into this Indian thing and then turns into a caricature of something else. And so, yeah, it was this really interesting, you know, the end product, I guess, was this video you see of this hair slowly growing on this man's face, which is my face. But the process of it was really interesting because, you know, I wasn't growing this hair in India. I was growing it in Nottingham in the UK where I was living. And the response to me when, you know, I'd be out in the streets or doing grocery shopping or whatever was really strange. You know, when I had this mustache inside parting and I was actually wearing this shirt that's in the picture, which is, you know, the piece was called Fresh on the Boat, like this idea of being fresh off the boat into, right, you know, from India into the UK. And the response to me was really kind of really bizarre. You know, I would get a lot of stares and people looking at me as if I was kind of from another planet almost.
And then the
opposite when I would be in Indian shops in the UK and suddenly I was able to get discounts, you know.
I remember chuckling at that.
You know, kind of this. So it's a really bizarre thing. And it's just hair, isn't it? You know, it's just kind of a couple of months of hair growth, how it can massively transform. So I guess I was interested in how big a part of, I guess it's part of the wider story of how much our faces and, you know, appearances say about us, even not thinking about the body, just the face alone.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's fascinating because then you and Yu, the translator in your TED Talk, start doing the piece where you're like, andale, 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 andale. Because they thought you were, you know, you said you're a caricature of a Mexican person. So you start something to look like an Indian and then at some point you look pseudo Mexican, yeah. I guess, and then you're still getting Indian discounts, but it was not. It was something else. So it's crazy.
Absolutely, it was a really bizarre kind of thing, and I guess it's kind of, you know, partly the point of the exercise in a way, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like I was expecting to suddenly become Indian, but it was kind of a interesting thing to do in terms of how people respond to you so differently.
Crazy. Yeah. And then this is great because it speaks to who you are, and you're an artist at the core of who you are. And I see a lot of the experiments you do, and there are many influences you work. So can you talk about how you just fell into art?
Sure. I mean, well, I guess it was along the traditional route, really, in that I, you know, I'd always been good at drawing, I guess, from a very young age. You know, I was always kind of the best in the class at drawing and copying stuff and whatever. So, you know, that's, as a kid, it's the thing that would make me feel special, I guess. I would enjoy it. So this kind of carried on through. And then, when I was kind of 16, 17, the things we do at art school were doing oil paintings and sort of extending that skill further, you know, making oil paintings that look like photographs. You know, that was the kind of thing we were doing back at school. And then after that, I guess I took the traditional routes into art education. So in the UK, that's a year foundation course and then a 3-year degree course. And then through those processes, you know, art changed for me in a way that, you know, in addition to being an enjoyable craft, it became a place to think, and a place to question myself and to question the world. And that suddenly became really exciting. So, you know, after I finished my degree, you know, I couldn't imagine doing anything else, basically.
I just
had to do it, and that's what I've been doing since.
So what was that first art experience like for you, where you showcased your work?
My first exhibition, it was really exciting. You know, it was kind of it was one of those can't believe it kind of moments where you sort of think, you know, I've just done some stuff, I had some ideas in my head and made some stuff, and now it's on a wall in a gallery and people are coming looking at it. Like, wow.
Yeah. That's good. You know, this might be a point in the interview where you and I have a difference of opinion, because, you know, I'm a Superman person, just to let you know. But I know you and my youngest brother tend to have this fascination with Mr. Spider-Man, Peter Parker. So, can you talk about the importance of Peter Parker and obviously the late Bruce Lee? Because you do a sick. I'm just letting you know. I'm going to ask you to do that water thin, like in a few minutes. But I love the fact that you said Spider-Man and Bruce Lee influence. You know, maybe some of your earlier work. I don't know if they still do now. And can you talk about how that just happened with your exhibitions and every other thing?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the reason for Peter Parker Spider-Man being such an influence, I guess, is because, you know, I was a real nerdy kid. And so the reason I felt like, you know, as well as, you know, don't get me wrong, I did and still do love the Supermans and the Batmans and all of those. But the reason that Peter Parker particularly spoke to me, and the reason I felt Marvel got it so right on that one, was I felt it was one of the first times that the comic book person really reflected who the reader was.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of nerds reading comics, can't get girlfriends and kind of, you know, scared to talk to girls and kind of, you know, into photography and science and this sort of stuff. So it felt like someone that I could really relate to, a kid that gets bullied, he wore glasses, skinny guy, didn't have a good physique and, you know, pining after this girl unrequited love and so it felt like, you know, oh wow, that's, you know, I'm sure this would be purposeful from the creators, but, you know, wow, that's me, that could be me, you know. So it's that, and in a way Bruce Lee was a similar sort of thing. Although he wasn't nerdy, he was kind of an unconventional hero, you know. He is this skinny little guy, and yet he was kind of, you know, this stylish kick-ass guy who's able to, you know, beat up all the baddies and do it with flair, and you know, so it's kind of partly in this area of wish film fulfillment, if you like, wanting to be those guys.
Right.
And then in terms of my artwork, it was much later, and only in the last few years that they've made their way into the work, because before that, I guess it felt like a journey I needed to go on in terms of giving myself permission to allow those things into my work. Because, you know, in the art world, in some ways, you know, pop culture and all those things can be frowned upon in art. You know, then, you know, not highbrow enough, or not serious enough, or whatever.
Huh.
And, you know, you sort of let yourself think that as an artist. But then I guess as things went further on, and I became much more confident in my voice as an artist and what's important to me, those things naturally found their way in there, because, you know, aside from all the fun and the obsessions and all those things in the life that have been in my life to do with them, they're an important part of the content of my work, to do with identity and being and humanity, I guess.
No, absolutely. And I love what you said about superheroes, because people have often asked me why the Superman story, and mine is not the same typical answer, but like you, I know, yeah. You know, I wasn't the bulging guy with a chiseled jaw or something with that when I was growing up, but I identify with the fact that this guy was an alien. And he was essentially was a nomad, and I was this kid that kept traveling, and I just, like, you know, there's this guy that finds himself in a different environment, and he has to fit in because he's not home anymore, and he has to figure out different ways, and then he has that dual identity where one side of him is you know, it's Clark Kent, the other is Superman, and I was thinking to myself, one side of me is this country and it's that country, and you know, I just sort of crafted the story around myself. And I created around that, and I was like, "Wow, this is, you know, I really relate." And I don't share that story often enough, because you know, you say Superman's a favorite hero, right? Like, people are like, "Oh, typical cliche, Superman." Everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't even need. But I'm like, but that's exactly, you know, for me, I guess that's one of the reasons I resonate with. And then,
sure.
Yeah, and then you go back, you look at the backstories, you know, Jewish immigrants' parents, or people of Jewish immigrants' parents, they wanted to create somewhere where they felt they could, you know, they could connect with something. And it's crazy. I think a lot of superheroes, like X-Men, for example, you know, where they cast a bunch of mixed. Yeah, it's crazy, right? I think it's so. This is where I can get into a bit of a nerd, but I think a lot of the origin stories are exactly what we're talking about, where you have a bunch of people. Maybe Marvel might do it. I don't know who does it better, but it's a bunch of, you know, X-Men is such a story that a lot of immigrants can relate to as well. It's just a bunch of people. Just
totally. I think that this is why I'm so excited and so happy that stuff like the X-Men is in is in the wide popular culture realm now. Like, it's, you know, for, you know, anyone who's seen the movies, or, and particularly if you're from a immigrant background or a minority background, you realize it's just those movies and those characters and those kind of coming of age stories are just completely about otherness and kind of being an outsider or a minority or a different race or different language or, you know, something different. It's kind of it's just completely about that, and it's kind of amazing that those stories are exist in such a wide mainstream place. I think it's great.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. Now, we were talking about Imitation early, and Bruce Lee has very, very famous.
Yeah,
cool. You know, it's Be Like Water, and I believe you've done an exhibition called Be Like Water. I think, right?
That's right. That's right.
How does it sound? I don't know. How does Bruce Lee do that? I can't.
you'll have to forgive me if I get this wrong, because I've not done it in a long time. But I'll give it a go. So, empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. You put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. Put in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Be water, my friend. I think it's something like that.
Oh, that's amazing! I'm sorry. That is so amazing. I love it. I love it. I love it. And it's, I liked your story about why, you know, Bruce Lee was someone, you know, unconventional. The mission statement of my media company is use your difference to make a difference. You know, when I I really started to embrace that difference and being that unconventional, and I thought that that was fascinating. But you know, thank you for doing that. We've got a couple more questions before we gotta let you go back to jet setting. with the world right now, where we, you know, I'm a millennial, and you know, they say we're the most diverse generation. They say we're in a digital world. They say we're you know, now global interaction makes more sense. But then you see a lot of what's happened, unfortunately, in the last week. And you know, and it stems from people being different. Whether it's like you don't have this religion or you don't have this cultural background, you're not, you know, you're superior or inferior. How do you feel like this is one of the reasons I love? I really want to embrace communicating across cultures, and I want to educate others to do that. That's why I do the podcast and produce the content. Yeah. How do you feel like we can get to a better society by, you know, getting past using stereotypes to profile? Getting past the stories to getting past the idea of telling other people's stories for them because of how they look like. What's your opinion?
Gosh, yeah, it's huge. I don't know. I mean, I think it's
a tough question. I don't know the answer myself, so I'm just curious if you have an opinion.
I guess it's about putting positivity out there. I mean, that sounds like a very hippie sort of answer, but I guess I mean, like, you know, sharing our differences or being open to or finding ways to open the conversation of our differences with others, I guess. Like, you know, in a way, this is you know, this is essentially why I make art. You know, it's politically for this reason. You know, it's a way to try to make myself free in a way from stereotypes, from being boxed in. And And I guess what I mean by that is not just unshackling myself from boxes I get put in, but, you know, I really do prescribe to the notion out there that, you know, I'm not free until we're all equally free. Mm. And, you know, in terms, and I feel like the action that we can kind of put out there is sharing, I guess, sharing of ourselves and whatever that means. But not forcing, I guess, you know, I guess kind of opening things out and inviting people in rather than preaching or forcing it, anything in any way.
Well, that's fascinating to me. So your artwork allows you to express yourself and free yourself. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it works towards that. So, you know, this idea of making my identity more slippy, you know, changing what, offering something different to what you might expect from what I look like or where I'm from. Yes, that's a way to unshackle myself as well. But I guess it's an offering as well for, you know, anyone who engages with that to unshackle themselves as well.
Yeah.
And it's not in any way my trying to, say I know better, you know, you should do this. It's trying to do work on myself as well. You know, the more work I make myself about upturning what my identity is, it will help me to also not have to have less judgment and all of that, you know. Kind of maybe I will be open to seeing your Skype image on here that I'm looking at and not think that's an African-American. This guy could be from Nigeria, you know,
And the audience, I can't tell you enough, if you haven't seen his TED Talk, you know, who am I, you have to listen to it. Because even someone like me who, like, I you know, I always say, you know, I pride myself in being an international person. I did exactly what you intended to do. I was like, okay, we've got a Chinese and an Indian. Something's going to be in that. And I love the fact that, you know, it arrested me in a way.
Yeah.
And I checked myself and I was like, because you weren't being overt about it, but I knew, I got the point of what you were saying. And I was like, he's using his art to just subtly tell me this message. And I was like, I do this myself. And I'm teaching other people not to do it. But here I was, I just made that assumption.
Yes, I mean, you know, I would have made the same assumption.
Yeah.
You know, even though I made that thing. And I guess it's not, you know, it's partly about trying to free ourselves from assumptions, but partly it's about kind of, I can't remember what advert it's from where the slogan is together, not the same. Yes. And I really like that. I guess it's kind of the thing that I'm interested in promoting, as lots of people are doing as well, including yourself, is that it's not about trying to be the same as a different culture or kind of doing things this in the same way. It's respecting each other's stuff. It's kind of,
yeah,
you know, that we can still be open to it, but still encourage difference, I guess.
I think it's using your difference to make a difference. I heard that somewhere before. I don't know where. I like it. You strive for authenticity in your art. But yeah, and where can, this is the last couple questions, where can we find you to see more of your stuff, and what's new for you?
Yeah, well, you can check my website, which is just hetainpatel.com. I'm on Twitter, which I'm not so great at, but the most up to date stuff for me is probably just on my Facebook page, which is very open. Just so hook up to me on Facebook, and that's nice and easy. And next, kind of, I'm working on some live performances for next year, which is a sequel to a live performance I made this year called American Boy, and which is kind of a live show made of film quotes. And then I'm working on some new film installations over the next couple of years, which will eventually lead to my first feature film.
Ooh.
Which I'm really excited about. So yeah, I'm kind of making live performance and films, and I guess I'm interested, you know, as with through our conversation, of kind of, you know, spreading the message out and wide. You know,
that's amazing. I can't wait. I got to see some of your shows. I don't know if you're ever coming out to New York, but the films you said, that's interesting. I'd definitely be one of the people in line watching that, because I would love to see your adaptation.
It's something I'm excited about, you know, just kind of I'm like with the TED talk, I'm interested in reaching audiences that are not necessarily art going audiences, you know, that might not come into a gallery or go theater, and so you know, TED talk you can see online, and films, I'd love to kind of tap into an audience that come to see films, because, you know, I'm interested in that as well.
Gotcha.
So yeah, let's see.
Oh, by the way, there's only one right answer to this question, so there's no pressure, but are you a Bolton or Manchester United fan? Or
Oh man, there's no my dad would kick my ass if I did not say Bolton won.
What?
Yeah. Oh man. My dad's a big Bolton fan, but then as soon as you get into Manchester, you know, you get into trouble whether you're a United or a City fan as well. So there's all sorts of football politics there.
Okay, well, in case you couldn't tell, I'm a huge Manchester United fan. You know, I've been since the days of Dwight York and Andy Cole and David Beckham and when they're all, you know, Nicky, but all these people. All right, fine, whatever. All right. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, sir. The way I close usually is asking the audience, our guests, amazing guests, how they use their difference to make a difference. So, sir, how do you use your difference to make a difference?
Wow. Well, I'm just going to keep making art and keep putting it out there, and I'll keep an optimistic view that people will engage with me.
Right. And a lot of what you've said throughout the conversation has been that, and I've been fascinated. And thank you for taking the time to talk. I know we were trying to do a lot of times, especially with time zones, but I really appreciate you taking the time in between your travels. I've enjoyed the conversation, and I'm sure others will. And please let us know whenever you have more stuff, and we'll definitely promote it for sure.
Likewise. Thanks so much, Tyler. It was great talking to you.
Likewise. It's been a pleasure.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uydmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.